When state actors or non-state actors use human trafficking, it can become a threat to our national security.
The United States lists China as among the worst human trafficking offenders. It's Wednesday, June 28th. This is VOA Asia. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Join us, too, on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, a Chinese Nobel laureate is terminally ill. The U.S. and South Korean presidents meet today. More Americans are from Asia, measuring weight and using Zika to fight cancer. It's all on today's VOA Asia. The United States has declared China as among the world's worst offenders in human trafficking and forced labor, placing it alongside countries that the U.S. has long disparaged, Iran, North Korea, and Syria. U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson commented on the report that puts China at the bottom of the list.
China was downgraded to Tier 3 status in this year's report, in part because it has not taken serious steps to end its own complicity in trafficking, including forced laborers from North Korea that are located in China. American consumers and businesses must also recognize they may have an unwitting connection to human trafficking. Supply chains creating many products that Americans enjoy may be utilizing forced labor. The State Department does engage with businesses to alert them to these situations so that they can take actions on their own to ensure that they are not in any way complicit.
The United States credited Beijing with taking, quote, some steps to address human trafficking, but it said local officials in Xinjiang coerced Uyghur men and women to participate in forced labor, while authorities forcibly repatriated North Koreans without screening them for the possibility of trafficking. Decreased law enforcement efforts to combat trafficking and subjected Chinese men, women, and children into forced labor in brick kilns, coal mines, and factories with little government oversight. The report said Chinese women and girls are subjected to sex trafficking within China. Secretary Tillerson said the problem is not only in China, and it's becoming increasingly difficult to detect.
Our challenge is enormous. Today, globally, it's estimated that there are 20 million victims of human trafficking. So clearly, we have a lot of work to do, and governments around the world have a lot of work to do. As with other forms of illicit crime, human trafficking is becoming more nuanced and more difficult to identify. Much of these activities are going underground, and they're going online.
The report listed 22 other countries in the lowest Tier 3 category, including Belarus, Belize, Burundi, the Central African Republic, Comoros, Congo, the Democratic Republic of Congo, Equatorial Guinea, Eritrea, Guinea, Guinea-Bissau, Iran, North Korea, Mali, Mauritania, Russia, Sudan, South Sudan, Syria, Turkmenistan, Uzbekistan, and Venezuela. Tillerson says action must be taken because human trafficking presents many deep problems not only to the victims, but to the stability of society overall.
Obviously, the consequences of our failure to act in this area has so many other negative impacts around the world. It breeds corruption. It undermines the rule of law. It erodes the core values that underpin a civil society. Transnational criminal networks also, whether they be drug dealers, money launderers, or document forgers, are partly enabled by participating in human trafficking activities as well. When state actors or non-state actors use human trafficking, it can become a threat to our national security.
The designation of China as a human trafficking offender could further aggravate tensions between Washington and Beijing at a time when U.S. President Donald Trump had sought to enlist Chinese President Xi Jinping in an effort to curb North Korea's nuclear weapons development. Last week, Trump said in a Twitter comment he appreciated Beijing's efforts to rein in Pyongyang's military ambitions, but it, quote, has not worked out. Before the report's release, Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesman Liu Kang said China strongly opposes the United States speaking irresponsibly, and China is willing to strengthen cooperation in the fight against human trafficking with all countries. Mr. Trump's daughter, Ivanka, said her father's administration has already taken steps to address the issue.
On a personal level, as a mother, this is much more than a policy priority. It is a clarion call to action in defense of the vulnerable, the abused, and the exploited.
It said that worldwide there are fewer than 10,000 human trafficking convictions in the last year, while estimates of the number of victims of human trafficking remain in the tens of millions. The report said that many criminal justice systems around the world are faced with cases that exceed their processing capacity. Limited funding and poor training for personnel impede the investigation of many types of crimes, including human trafficking. Often, the time and resources that do exist are stretched across competing priorities. Beyond China, the State Department report said Russia maintained and recently expanded bilateral contracts with North Korea so Pyongyang could operate labor camps on Russian soil and subjected thousands of North Korean workers to forced labor. Authorities routinely detained and deported potential forced labor victims without screening for signs of exploitation and prosecuted victims forced into prostitution for prostitution offenses. Countries placed in Tier 3 can be penalized with sanctions, barring them from participating in cultural exchanges with the United States. But past U.S. presidents have granted waivers to the worst offenders, and Trump could potentially do the same. These are among some of the top Asia stories trending on VOANews.com. Hong Kong's youth press campaign despite China's rejection of full democracy. U.S. and India leaders pledge to boost security, trade ties. THAAD remains contentious issue for U.S.-South Korea summit. Activists question China's response to missionaries' murder in Pakistan. U.S. Navy holds memorial service for 7 sailors killed in crash. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories, and there's a lot more, too, when you visit Facebook at VOA Asia and our VOANews.com website. VOA Asia continues. The wife of jailed Chinese democracy activist Liu Xiaobo said Tuesday her 61-year-old husband's cancer is beyond surgery, radiation, and chemotherapy. Liu Xia's statement came in a video a day after a family lawyer revealed that the Nobel Peace Laureate has been granted a medical parole and is being treated at Shenyang Hospital in northern China for advanced cancer. Liu was serving an 11-year sentence for inciting state subversion by co-authoring Charter 08, a manifesto for democratic reforms. The document was made public in 2008. He was arrested, tried, and convicted the next year. His lawyer said he was diagnosed with a disease last month. Liu was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize in 2010, but prohibited from receiving the award. A U.S. Embassy spokesperson Tuesday called on Chinese authorities not only to release Mr. Liu, but allow his wife out of house arrest. A bipartisan congressional commission on China called on President Donald Trump to seek the couple's immediate transfer to the United States to explore treatment options, along with 4 other dissidents facing serious health issues. Human Rights Watch China expert Sophie Richardson tells VOA's Victor Beatty this development is a blow to those who had hoped for reform toward a less authoritarian leadership under President Xi Jinping, who she said appears on course to gain another term.
I think it is devastating for Liu Xia, Liu Xiaobo's wife, who has, of course, suffered the last 7 years under house arrest. And frankly, for anybody who thought that maybe the outcome for them might be slightly less awful than the recent past.
When you heard the news, was this news to you, or did you know about his health for a while?
No, it really was, I think, a shock to many of us who had not known that he was nearly this ill. I mean, we all know that prison conditions in China, under the best of circumstances, are not conducive to fantastic health, but I don't think anybody had known just how sick he actually was. And after, I think, the initial shock and revulsion, all I could think of were, you know, the 2 or 3 other very prominent peaceful Chinese government critics who have been allowed to get sick and die either in detention or shortly after being transferred to other non-detention medical facilities.
I think without doubt, Liu Xiaobo is among the best known rights activists in China. He goes back many years to the 1989 Tiananmen Square crackdown by the Chinese military. Could you give us a little thumbnail sketch of Liu Xiaobo's impact?
He really has been one of the central figures in, you know, the community of intellectual activists who sort of cut their teeth at Tiananmen but then carried on throughout the 90s. His sort of particular niche was as kind of a public intellectual, ostensibly a literary critic, but also a commentator on political reform or lack thereof. And you know, the particular effort he was engaged in that really irked the authorities was the drafting of a document called Charter 08, which was sort of loosely modeled on Charter 77, the pro-democracy manifesto from Eastern Europe in the late 70s. And he and other Chinese activists sort of wrote their own pro-democracy manifesto and published it in 2008. When it got, I think, probably more attention than it might otherwise would have, because that was the same year that China was hosting the Olympics. And so the world was really kind of quite focused on what was happening in China that year. His prosecution on charges of incitement to subvert the state and his phenomenally harsh sentence of 11 years was really a harbinger of what we've seen a lot in the last couple of years, much harsher sentences given to people who are engaging in behavior that 10 years ago, you know, might have prompted a little bit of a chat with the authorities, but certainly not criminal prosecution.
Sophie Richardson said medical parole does not mean Liu Xiaobo is free. He's still under detention, just that he's being held at a hospital and not a prison. The Norwegian Nobel Committee said that while it's delighted that Liu is out of prison, it regrets it took a serious illness to gain his release. It said Chinese authorities carry a heavy responsibility if Liu Xiaobo, because of his imprisonment, has been denied necessary medical treatment. Happening now in Asia, South Korean officials are voicing support for the controversial U.S. Terminal High Altitude Defense, or THAAD, missile defense system in advance of President Moon Jae-in's summit with President Donald Trump. It remains a contentious issue as U.S. lawmakers voice concerns over deployment delays. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're always happy to have you along with us today on VOA Asia. The first summit between South Korean President Moon Jae-in and U.S. President Donald Trump begins later today in Washington, and it comes in the wake of the death of Otto Warmbier. The U.S. student had been held prisoner in North Korea for over 15 months and was finally released last week in a coma with serious and terminal brain damage. While both leaders are expected to emphasize the common threat of the repressive and nuclear-armed Kim Jong-un regime, Brian Padden in Seoul reports increasing differences over security and trade could undermine the show of unity.
Both leaders in Washington and Seoul cite Warmbier's brutal treatment by the North Korean government as further reason to halt Pyongyang's rapidly advancing nuclear and ballistic missile program. But the two allies seem at odds on how to make that happen. The Trump administration has prioritized the short term, preventing North Korea from developing a nuclear-armed intercontinental ballistic missile that can strike the U.S. mainland. Washington has stressed the threat of military force and economic pressure from China, Pyongyang's key trading partner, but Trump has now expressed disappointment that Beijing's efforts have not worked. The progressive South Korean leader wants to balance military deterrence and sanctions with dialogue and engagement to ease tensions over time.
So I believe what Kim Jong-un would want the most is to have a security guarantee for his regime.
Moon's outreach proposals may not be well received in Washington, especially after Trump's hardline policies have been endorsed by Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe.
It would almost invite a type of reaction from President Trump that would look more at why South Korea is not towing a certain type of line that they're already seeing vis-a-vis the U.S.-Japan relationship.
Moon's decision to delay the full deployment of the U.S. THAAD missile defense system, citing the need to conduct an environmental study, has also raised concerns in Washington. However, many see this move as a way to accommodate China's opposition to the American advanced weapon deployment near its border. Trump has also threatened to terminate the U.S.-South Korea Free Trade Agreement that produced a bilateral U.S. deficit of over $27 billion last year. Business leaders in Seoul advised the South Korean president to propose a $10 billion Buy American fund to boost imports of U.S. oil and other products that Trump can boast about on Twitter.
His tweets form an important part of the policy directives and the overall environment of the U.S. political and economic scene. So President Moon should plan in advance what he wants Mr. Trump to tweet.
Moon will likely emphasize that South Korean companies like Hyundai have built factories in the U.S. that employ 45,000 people and contributed $138 billion to the U.S. economy. Brian Patton, VOA News, Seoul.
You're listening to VOA Asia.
News happens around the clock, and VOA brings you the latest at the top of each hour.
This is Joe Palca.
I'm Victor Beatty.
Francis Alonso.
Tune in for a summary of the news at the top of each hour, around the clock, on The Voice of America. Hourly newscasts on the radio and on the internet at voanews.com. VOA, a leader in news coverage for over 70 years.
This news alert from VOA Asia. Iran's foreign minister has denounced the U.S. Supreme Court's partial reinstatement of a travel ban against six predominantly Muslim countries and says the decision could energize terrorist groups. He said the travel ban punishes people who have never, quote, been involved in terrorism. You have the latest stories and most interesting features when you visit VOA Asia Facebook. VOA Asia continues. Over the last year, all races and ethnic groups grew in the United States. The U.S. Census Bureau showed that trend in a recently released annual count. VOA's Aline Barros tells us the fastest growing segments of the U.S. population are Asian and Hispanic populations.
America's diversity remains on the rise, according to the latest annual study by the U.S. Census Bureau, which offers a snapshot of today's population. One of the driving forces behind this growth is higher birth rates among Hispanics and Asians. The report shows the Hispanic population is at 57.5 million, an increase of 2% since 2015. Meanwhile, the Asian population grew to 21.4 million, with the fastest growth rate of all ethnic groups at 3%.
Okay, well, what you find in this latest report from the Census Bureau is that actually the Asian, percentage-wise, the Asian population grew slightly faster than the Hispanic population. But then in terms of numbers, the Hispanic population was larger. So in absolute numbers, you have more Hispanics.
The study estimates that all groups had more births than deaths in the last year, except non-Hispanic white people, who have experienced a decrease in births by 163,300 nationally. Geographically, the new data shows the majority of Asians and Hispanics reside in the west of the U.S.
And you see a large Hispanic population in California, in Texas. Those are traditional Hispanic communities, you know, where there are economies that are well adjusted to it and cultural resources where people feel comfortable.
The Census Bureau makes a complete count of everybody living in the U.S. and its territories every 10 years. The count is mandated by the Constitution, and it will next take place in 2020. Aline Barros, VOA News.
Developing at this hour in Asia, Pakistan has criticized the United States for declaring an anti-India Kashmiri rebel leader as a global terrorist and defended militants fighting New Delhi's rule in Kashmir as legitimate struggles for freedom. The State Department imposed sanctions on the Pakistan-based chief of the main rebel group. Visit VOA Asia Facebook daily and stay up to date. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, when we're buying groceries by weight, well, a few grams off might not be a big deal, but we do expect that the store scales be calibrated to show the exact measure. The situation becomes a little bit more complicated when we want to know the exact measure of something weighing 100 tons or more. VOA's George Pudich visited a lab that calibrates large force instruments.
Measuring groceries is easy. Just put the bag on a scale and read how much the gravity pulls on the potatoes inside. But how to measure the force of a jet engine or a space rocket engine that could have a thrust of more than 900 tons? Many private and government laboratories have instruments for measuring large forces, but in order to read those forces correctly, they have to be calibrated. In the U.S., that is done at the National Institutes for Science and Technology with a huge stack of dead weights, themselves calibrated to a very precise weight.
Through the art and procedure of the calibration work, the standard forces are then placed upon a unit under test, and our customer or the owner of the device receives the amount of output from his device under that particular applied force.
This recently restored three-story tall stack of stainless steel discs is the heaviest dead weight in the world, weighing 1 million pounds or almost 500 tons. 19 discs, each weighing more than 22.5 tons, are loosely linked together so that the hydraulic equipment on the top can lift them one at a time. That way, the total weight pressuring the sample or the instrument being calibrated can be slowly increased and won't exceed the force it can handle. Applying dead weight at a sample of the tested material or to the force-measuring instrument deforms the piece, and that change is registered by attached electronic elements.
Industry can absolutely obtain the very best force calibrations they can if they want to monitor something that requires very, very highly accurate force measurements, such as engine thrust, strength of materials, and that kind of thing.
Increasingly, powerful computers and sophisticated software have started taking away some of the tasks performed by the deadweight machines. It is already possible to create mathematical models of different materials and calculate their deformations under strain.
We simulate them in the computer essentially by applying forces to them in the same way that you might in an experimental apparatus to see how they respond to that stress.
Using computer models, scientists can also combine a large number of ingredients in order to test new composite materials and see how they respond to stress. But once used for building an actual object, such as an airplane wing, the material has to be tested again, and this time with a stress-measuring instrument most likely calibrated with a huge dead weight at NIST. George Putich, VOA News, Washington.
You may recall the Zika virus made headlines last year because it caused microcephaly in many babies whose mothers were pregnant when they had the virus. Microcephaly keeps the brain from developing normally in children, but it's relatively harmless to adults. That got cancer researchers thinking, and VOA's Kevin Enix reporting, about the possibility the virus could be used to attack cancer cells in the brain.
The Zika virus can cause microcephaly in the developing children of pregnant women. The virus attacks the embryo and keeps the brain from developing normally. Microcephaly can cause children a lifetime of problems, while adults who get the virus experience mild symptoms similar to the flu. But it is Zika's ability to attack brain stem cells that intrigued brain cancer researchers in Britain.
It seems here that we have a virus that can infect the adult brain without causing much damage, but in the baby's brain, it causes very severe damage to those stem cells, and we've got a population of stem cells we want to destroy.
Cancer stem cells like these often contain a unique protein called Musashi-1 that also lives in a lot of other cancers, and Zika, researchers say, can attack cells containing Musashi-1 and kill them.
Any cell type that makes a lot of Musashi-1 could be potentially killed by Zika virus. And Musashi-1 is known to be expressed very, very high levels in many different cancer types.
This is highly speculative research, and some doctors are concerned about the indiscriminate nature of any virus that attacks brain cells.
We have to bear in mind the effect it might have on targeting normal stem cell elements in the brain. Not just the brain tumor patient's brain.
The other concern is that a weakened version of Zika that would be used in any drug won't be very effective.
So in order to avoid that, the viruses need to be weakened, attenuated, we call it. And in attenuating the virus, you may well end up with a virus that doesn't attack the cancer cells quite as strongly as you'd like.
So any potential drug or therapy is years away, but there is hope that Zika, a devastating illness, could one day be used to help fight another devastating illness, cancer. Kevin Enix, VOA News.
We hope you're well wherever you're listening. We'd like to say hello to all of our friends in Myanmar joining us on Facebook via VOA Burmese. We thank our director, Tracy Carter, and engineer Jim Harmon, managing editor Diane Gao, Ali Ogden and David Byrd on our VOA Asia team. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We hope you have a great day ahead.